Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story.
Chapter 5. Emmeline Grangerfield was in search of the perfect hat. She had a closet full of hats, of course, but none of them marked her as a wordsmith, a scribe, a woman of letters, a soon-to-be-famous writer. How could she pen her first column for the Farmer's Wife magazine if she didn't have the right hat? "Darling, are you absolutely sure that writers wear hats when they work?" Florence asked Sunday afternoon when Emmeline called her for advice. "It's not as if you're writing in an unheated hovel, barely able to grip the pen with your shivering fingers." "I don't write with the pen," Emmeline reminded her sister-in-law. "I use a typewriter, like all professional writers."
"I could ask Daisy for the loan of her straw gardening hat," Florence offered. "That way you'll look like the women you're writing for."
Emmeline sighed. "How often do I have to remind you that the average farmer's wife reader is a sophisticated woman? Have you actually read the copies I sent over? Why, there are articles about travel and foreign affairs and politics, all kinds of fascinating things. And you imagine that the authors of these articles wrote them while wearing hats?" Florence laughed. "Well, then, let's get you outfitted. I'll drop by tomorrow on my way to work with a selection of hats that strike me as writerly." Florence might laugh, Emmeline thought, after hanging up and making her way to the kitchen for her afternoon cup of coffee. But one shouldn't underestimate the importance of the right clothes for the job at hand. It was a lesson her beloved Aunt Margaret had never tired of repeating. If you wanted not only to appear smart and sophisticated, but feel smart and sophisticated, you had to pay attention to every detail of your outfit, from your slip and stockings to the tilt of your silk toque. The first time sophomore Emmeline had walked into the offices of the Daily Kansan as the newly appointed Society Affairs Editor, the click of her heels, or more precisely, the click of her Dove Gray Boulevard pumps, was like the dash and dot of code. "You belong here," the message said. "You will do a marvelous job." Carrying her coffee upstairs to her sitting room, Emmeline reminded herself that she was already an established quilting columnist, hat or no hat. Nearly 3 years of writing Quilt Along with Emmeline in the Milton Falls Gazette had made hers a household name across central Ohio, or at least in the greater Milton Falls area. Of course, The Farmer's Wife was read by hundreds of thousands of women. Hundreds of thousands! So Emmeline couldn't rest on her laurels. The stakes were higher now, and there was more competition in this larger arena. There was Florence Laganky's Nancy Page column and Alice Brooks' Household Arts, another popular column in syndication. Both were published in newspapers, of course, and had the advantage of appearing weekly as opposed to monthly. But Emmeline would have more words at her disposal, up to 1,500, which would give her more space to establish her own personality and way of doing things. Oh, she wished she had the right hat. Emmeline was itching to get her first column composed and off to her editor, and of course she really didn't need a hat to write, but she so loved the idea. She imagined her children, Margie and Tommy, coming to the doorway to ask her something. Pointing to her head, Emmeline would say, "Mother has her writing cap on. You know what that means." Not that Margie ever wanted to pop in for a little chat. In fact, Emmeline's 14-year-old daughter often seemed to go out of her way to avoid her. Oh, if there was something of Emmeline's she wanted to borrow, that sweet little brown single-breasted blazer, the one with the box pleats, for instance,
or her darling embroidered evening bag. Then Margie was as attentive as could be, throwing out compliments left and right. "I hope I'm still as attractive as you when I'm 37. Or, "You know, all of my friends are so jealous that I have such a fashionable mother." But as soon as the desired item was procured, Margie was back to being her daddy's little girl with no time for her mother at all. Speaking of Margie's father, what was Thomas doing right now? Last she'd seen him, he'd been reading the paper in his study, but that had been right after lunch, and it was almost 2:30. She listened for sounds of life, but aside from a dripping faucet in the children's bathroom, the house was silent as a tomb. Margie was off at her friend Rose's house for the afternoon, and Tommy was up the street at Alvin Russell's, building model airplanes or some such. So where was her husband? Emmeline rose from her desk and went into the hallway. "Thomas," she called down the stairs, but no corresponding reply issued forth. Where had that man gone? Had he snuck out to the office, even though they'd agreed that Sunday was a family day? Well, it wasn't much of a family day if the children weren't home, Emmeline had to admit. She feared that might be the way of things from now on. The children out with friends until they were off to college, and then only home on school breaks. She didn't like the sound of that at all. In fact, she rather preferred the thought of the children never leaving home. Oh, they should go to college and get married, but there was no need for them to look any further than Ashland College for an education, and the house would be big enough to hold several families if they turned the maid's quarters on the third floor into two private apartments. Emily began pacing the hallway. The thought of her children growing up and leaving home was deeply perturbing to her, but she knew from past experience that such ideas were often like grains of sand slipping into an oyster shell. The irritation slowly gave way to inspiration, and soon a pearl was formed. Perhaps Emmeline's column could be about quilts and family. Surely that would be agreeable to the average farmer's wife reader, who might be sophisticated and worldly, but presumably had children, maybe large broods of them. What if she wrote about the importance of family quilts, the everyday sort of quilts that graced the children's beds and that were laid out over the sofa back, just ready to be used for an afternoon nap? Not that the beds and sofas in Emmeline's house were covered with quilts. She was partial to the vanity down bedspreads she'd ordered from London a few years ago and absolutely adored. As for quilts on other furniture, she couldn't imagine a quilt on the back of one of her Davenports, but then she didn't need to. She could imagine the quilts on Eula's sofa instead. Yes, perhaps when writing her farmer's wife column, Emmeline could use Eula's house as her imaginary home or a touchstone of sorts. Or perhaps a combination, an amalgamation of Eula's, Dorothy's, and Bess's. Dorothy's house was on the small side, yes, but outfitted with good quality, if not especially stylish, pieces, and she too had quilts as part of her everyday decor. Oh, and all three of them had quilt baskets in their parlors or living rooms, tucked behind a French tub chair, Bess, or a deep-seated armchair, Eula, or a rocking chair, Dorothy. That would be something Emily might want to refer to. As I pulled my quilt basket onto my lap from its hiding place beneath my favorite chair in the parlor, Emmeline felt a little pop of excitement, the way she did when she got her best ideas. In spite of her insistence to anyone who would listen that the farmer's wife reader was practically a Radcliffe-educated urban sophisticate, she knew that most of the women who read the magazine were sturdy, everyday sorts. Intelligent, of course. Anyone could see that simply by perusing the letters to the editor that were printed each month, with a genuine interest in the events of the day. But how many of them would truly be comfortable in Emmeline's world of charity balls and fashionable shops?
Not that Emmeline attended many charity balls these days. Such events had fallen out of favor in recent years once someone realized that the money that it cost to put them on could be applied directly to the charitable organizations, essentially cutting out the middleman. But she remained fashionable as ever, which was her duty as wife of the chief executive officer of Grangerfields & Sons Insurance Company. While most days saw her at home or at her office on the second floor of the quilting company, Emmeline was always stylishly, not to mention expensively, dressed. Perhaps she should ask Bess where she bought her clothes, or did Bess make most of her clothes? Perhaps Emmeline could ask her for some patterns, or she could go to Goody's tomorrow morning, look at the pattern books, and take notes. She wouldn't actually sew her own clothes, of course not, but she could become conversant about popular styles. Hat or no hat, Emmeline felt the urge to write. Walking into her sitting room, she wondered if she perhaps should make a quilt for everyday use, one she could write about. She had a lovely chaise lounge tucked over there in the corner. Surely she could make a quilt that would pair with its deep pink upholstery, yes? But it had to be a quilt that didn't simply demonstrate her exquisite skills as both a quilter and a designer, as most of the quilts she made nowadays did. It should be a quilt that she could wrap around Tommy when he came home from school with a cold, or one that Margie could cover herself up with when she was having a particularly difficult that time of the month. Not an appliqué quilt, no. It should be pieced, and since she imagined it for the children's use, perhaps a nice star pattern. Oh, she'd seen an advert in a magazine for a rosette quilt pattern the other day, and she thought it was awfully nice. No need to send off for the pattern herself, naturally. It was one of those designs that looked difficult, but the practiced eye could see that its complexity was an illusion, a trick of the eye. Emmeline could work up a quick pattern of her own in an hour's time. Which came first, the quilt or the column? Perhaps she could get a start on the column, and when she came to a spot where she'd run out of ideas, she'd sketch out the pattern and work out the measurements. Maybe it's for the best that I'm alone in the house today, she said to Tiger, the family's orange tabby cat, who had just wandered into the room. No distractions. Emmeline sighed, taking a seat at her writing desk. She rather liked distractions, but there was nothing to be done unless she wanted to haul her typewriter to Thomas's office on East Main. She might do it, too, other than the fact that she'd look absolutely ridiculous lugging the machine up three flights of stairs. Slipping a piece of paper in the typewriter's paper guide, she twisted the platen knob a few turns. Fingers poised above the keys, Emmeline wondered how best to begin. With an introduction? Hello, I'm Emmeline and I'm new here. Or should she plunge right in? Oh, let's plunge, she said to Tiger, who stared at her for a moment before hopping onto the chaise lounge, thus giving Emmeline an idea for her opening gambit. I've never made a quilt for a cat, have you? She began, the typewriter keys making a satisfying clickety-clack against the paper. No, the quilts I make are for my loved ones, my human loved ones, and as soon as I finish writing this, I'm going to chase Tiger off the couch where he's taking up residence on the lovely green and pink rosette quilt I finished just this morning. I've imagined a wonderful life for this quilt, a life of picnics and naps and cold winter evenings where its only job will be to keep my children cozy and warm. It's an everyday sort of quilt, you see, the kind of quilt I love the most, the kind of quilt that brings back wonderful memories whenever I look at it, even after it's grown old and worn, perhaps especially after it's grown old and worn. Oh, that's good, she reported to the cat. That's a very good start. Of course, when I look it over tomorrow, I'll make changes here and there, but I'm so pleased to have the gist of the thing down on paper. A knock sounded at the front door, and a moment later Florence called from the foyer. Yoo-hoo, darling! I've found the perfect hat for you. It's simply adorable.
Emmeline stood. She considered telling Florence that she didn't need a hat after all. Her rich and supple imagination had once again done the trick. On the other hand, a girl could always use a new hat, and Florence did have marvelous taste.
Coming,
Emmeline called. As she crossed the threshold, she turned back, half expecting to see that green and pink quilt. Laughing at herself, she shook her head. Of course it wasn't there. She hadn't even made it yet. Oh, the power of the written word never failed to astonish Emmeline, especially when she was the one who'd written it.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.